Welcome to Let's Talk America. I'm Alan Keyes, and we're continuing. You know, in this first 2 weeks, since this is not only a new year, but we're dealing with a new Congress, and we actually went through something that suggested that maybe there's a different spirit at work right now in the Congress of the United States, that they have been used to coming in and taking it for granted somehow that all the folks who have been elected, new people, old people, whatever they might be, are going to wait until somebody on high decides who's going to do what as the Congress begins. And every time I see that going on, it occurs to me to remember that that's not the way things used to be in this country. In fact, in the 19th century, it was much more reliably the case that people who were coming in, even if they were new, if they were people who happened to be well known or had been involved in this, that, or the other thing in our politics, they could very well end up as chairman of committees and so forth and so on. There wasn't this notion that was even articulated, I think, during the course of the McCarthy voting, that somehow or another, what you do is you don't come in and expect right away that people are going to take you seriously. You have to sit there and wait until you, quote, know the ropes and so forth. But who set up all the ropes and who are doing all these things? It's people who, by and large now, think of themselves as members of Congress. Now, of course, we call them members of Congress in a loose-tongued sort of way. But it's called the House of Representatives. And that means that their first job is not to be members of the national government, not to be members of a party, not to be subservient to this or that one who might be in the leadership or might be have made all the moves required to get into the leadership by vote, by the way, of the previous Congress. That might not be the truth. Now, what they did was taken for granted that every Congress reflected a new will of the people, a new expression of that will. There was continuity and there were breakage, but it was an expression of the will of the people, and you took it seriously. And everybody who was there by dint of the will of the people was representing their constituents and had a right to expect to participate. Now, I think that was part of the spirit that was being expressed when people said, no, let's not assume that McCarthy is going to be voted in. Let's take a good hard look at how things have been handled. And particularly, by the way, I think in the aftermath of what was a kind of alien, communistic, totalitarian approach that the Democrats took when they were in charge of the House of Representatives. Nancy Pelosi made herself a little dictator. And to be quite frank about it, no particular individual, state, or party, this and that, is supposed to be dictating to the people of this country. That's not what they're there for, especially in the House. They're there to represent us and to represent the people in their district and to remind the whole world that this is a government of, by, and for the people, not a people of, by, and for the government. And yet we've been treated that way now more and more in the course of the last 20, 30 years, until I think they have grown accustomed to thinking that there are leaders. Well, my guests today are people I really like. It's a duo. I absolutely always look forward to this program and their visits because they represent precisely the dynamic spirit, the spirit of self-reliance, the spirit that remembers that America was built by folks who actually thought they had to take the initiative in taking care of themselves and building homes for their families and developing what they were going to do in terms of farms and enterprises and the capacity to take care of yourself. You know, we've drifted into this world where everybody is supposed to awaken every morning thinking about how the government's going to take care of them. We have even seen it to such an extent that what used to be a sign of self-reliance, even if you had to go to college and you borrowed some money to do it, then you were expected you were going to go out and do a job of work and you were going to repay your loan. But in keeping with the times, Joe Biden decided that he would give everybody the impression that somehow or another the government's going to do something for you that you used to be obliged to do for yourself, which is repay that loan. Is that a really good way to be? Well, Michelle and Leah Svensson are with me today, the resistance chicks, they call themselves. But you guys actually do more than resist. You encourage And I think that's one of the things that I like most about you, because you've been hard at work with grassroots people all over the place to revive that spirit that people have to organize themselves and take charge, because the lead is supposed to be taken by the people of this country. How can they represent what we haven't presented in the first place? Which is to say, how can they reflect our priorities and our conscience if we aren't making it known to them? Were you heartened, as I was, by this way of starting the session this time? I mean, I think the way it turned out, I kind of thought it might end up that way. But at the same time, I appreciated the debate. And I think a lot of things that were said by the folks who were saying, no, we don't want to have some knee-jerk ratification of what has already been arranged, what's supposed to be taken for granted. I thought that might be a good sign that the spirit of the representatives is changing, because the spirit of the people who elected them has finally registered with them as something they have to represent in the sense of standing for what the people really want. Am I making sense?
No, you're making absolute sense. And I think you're hitting the nail on the head when you keep using the word the spirit, because that's kind of the delineating line that we have seen, kind of a spirit of evil taking over our nation. And a lot of people are very afraid of that. But we, the people, and the power of our prayers and us actually getting up out of our seats, off of our couches, and getting involved has actually shifted and changed. So a lot of people were disappointed that Kevin McCarthy didn't actually won out in the end, got the speakership. But I count this as a massive win. And Lee and I have been talking about this on our show, about the debate itself, the fact that we had these 20 exposed for the entire world even to watch, not just for the United States, to see how the process happens. The education that happened in here was a 100% win in my book.
I find it interesting, because I have heard in one form or another a lot of folks who, both during and in the aftermath, said either that this is how these people should behave or whatever, because we need to get on with the business of governing. See? And it irked me. It's why I thought through this relationship between words and the actual nature of the institutions as suggested in the Constitution. Because the people who are in the House of Representatives, they're not working for the government, and therefore their main job is not governing. Their main job is representing the heart, the conscience, the mind, the priorities of the people, to make sure that this government we have stays within the boundaries that represent our conscience and our heart and our priorities for our state, for our communities, for our families, for our faith. And I think that spirit's returning, and it's really encouraging.
Yeah, there is this power dynamic where you have a lot of money in Washington, and they think that they are the elites, that they are there to tell us what to do. But when you read the Constitution, it actually says Congress shall not. These were men who were putting guardrails on themselves, shackles on themselves. They were saying, we don't want to allow this system that we are creating to run over the people, because we have been run over. And I think that what we're seeing right now is the in Wizard of Oz, where the curtain is pulled back and you see this tiny little man. And what the people in Congress, whether it's Speaker McCarthy or Mitch McConnell or Nancy Pelosi, what they don't want you to see is all these mechanisms that they have created to hide from us what they are doing. And the anger and the vehemence, if you saw anybody, whether it was Laura Ingraham or Sean Hannity or anybody decrying these 20, they were propping up that curtain. We don't want you people to know what goes on. We don't want you to actually be part of the government. We just want you for your votes. And I think a lot of people were exposed again. And to the point of the last 2 years, 4 years even, being in a kind of the great exposing We have learned so much, and we didn't know as a people how bills were passed. We didn't know that the speaker took it to a committee and didn't really go, it never gets through the committee. If it does get through the committee, it has to go back to the speaker. Because if it gets through the speaker, then it has to go through the rules committee. If it goes to the rules committee, it has to go back to the speaker. Then it's supposed to be put on the calendar so that they can debate it, but they don't debate it. They give you 24 hours to read it and vote on it. And that is not the way Congress was set up at all. It was supposed to be you propose a bill and you debate it.
That what they've essentially done is abolish government of, by, and for the people.
Exactly.
Create a situation in Washington where people who are elected are simply supposed to go and rubber stamp what's being produced by a process that right. they are now part of that may or may not reflect the heart, mind, conscience of the people they represent. But that means self-government is over and dead. And I think they are actually now, a lot of them, speaking this way, and they're producing results this way. Mm. They act as if, for example, all power has been delegated to the national government. So we're going to take steps because you guys have been silly enough to get dependent on some government money going into your state or helping with your education process. So we're not going to take over. And even though nowhere do I find in the Constitution of the United States that the power to decide what marriage is, the power to set up schools and educate kids, apart from what's necessary to deal with our military. That wasn't given to the national government. Right. But because we have this taxation system now that gives the government such a big chunk of the right. money that comes out of our pockets, they can use the money to then lure us into a situation where the government takes over this or that or the other thing, not delegated to it, and they'll take over responsibility for it, because a little money is either going to come or not come, or maybe even a lot of money is going to come or not come to this state or that family. And so in essence, we've allowed ourselves, through people who are taking advantage of the power that was established by the 16th Amendment, right, the income tax, then they're now taking over the whole government.
Right.
And they've already, with the repeal of the 17th Amendment, they changed the nature of the Senate so it no longer represents the states. Right. I think people need to think this through. And I pray that what happened at the start of this Congress on the Republican side, on the House side, will get people to thinking about it. What do we need to do to get rid of this mentality that essentially, it's not even a question of whether we work for them. No, they simply assume that they are the rulers and we are now just there to somehow make it clear that our government somehow has the rubber stamp of the people and their sort for some legitimacy. And I think one sign that nothing's really changed was that though people in the House challenged McCarthy, we're still stuck with Mitch McConnell in the Senate, even yeah. though I think the passage of that, what is it, $1.7 trillion in a bill chock full of everything that nobody really carefully examined, right? Except the little leadership cliques that produced it. And it wouldn't have been so successfully passed, and it certainly wouldn't now be treated as if it was a bipartisan this or that, if McConnell had done the job that McCarthy is now saying he's going to do, which is to actually start trying to put on the table things that reflect the heart and mind of the constituents who elected you. I think, though, it's a bad sign that we're still dealing in the Senate with a Republican mentality that reflects the rejection of the notion that we should respect the power of the grassroots. Do you think that the House now is going to inspire the kind of efforts you all have been consistently making to wake people up at the grassroots, to get them involved, starting at the local level, with the truth that if they are not governing, then we are all of us being enslaved.
Mm. You are beholden to people when you take money. I mean, those Senate seats require so much more money than these House seats. Those 20 House members that they were able to stand up against the machine because by and large, they took their donations from the grassroots. Everyone else, the reason they had to toe the line with McCarthy is McCarthy funded them. McCarthy funded their campaigns. And, you know, a gift, the Bible says the gift spoils the heart. And you have to be careful who you take a gift from because you're going to feel like you are beholden to them. And so I think that's why we don't see the same kind of grassroots mentality out of the Senate, mostly because of money. I mean, these are millions and millions of dollars that go into these Senate seats, and people are going to demand loyalty and fealty to these people. And Mitch McConnell, I don't know how he got to the position that he's in, Mr. Turtle Man. And the fact that he's some sort of head of the Senate, and the fact that these seemingly intelligent people follow him as some sort of leader. You only had a couple people coming up and challenging Mitch McConnell, Rick Scott and Josh Hawley. Thank God that they did. But even they know that there's some sort of, maybe you can enlighten us. What is this deal that in the Senate, you must toe the line to Mitch McConnell? Explain this to me. What has he done? What does he have on these people?
Because of what you mentioned at first, that things are set up now in such a way that as money is being raised and distributed for campaigns, you're not going to have much chance of success if the leadership doesn't back you, and if that then isn't reflected in what the senatorial campaign committee, which, you know, raises funds, and of course the RNC, which responds to, in a lot of ways, the mentality of the leadership, if they're not on your side.
Right.
And this is as if we're going to say to the people of this country, you only send to us people that we have vetted. But that would sort of be, it reminds me, of the communist form of government.
Yeah.
Because they had elections in the old Soviet Union, but the only people who got on the ballot were people who had been approved by the leadership of the Communist Party. Aren't we seeing, in point of fact, something that very much resembles that going on now in our politics?
Yeah.
And with regard to the Senate, I think the greatest mistake we made, and I've tried for years to get folks to make this a priority, we need to get rid of the 17th Amendment. It purported to be something that was going to be good for the people because instead of having election by the state legislatures, you had election by the people, right? That's
right.
Supposed to give the people more clout. It was, in fact, just the opposite. The founders were brilliant, and they put together the system so that not only would the grassroots have to be taken seriously with the House of Representatives, but the states as states would have to be taken seriously because you didn't get to the Senate except you passed muster with the people that had been chosen to sit in the state legislature. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that you kind of guaranteed that you wouldn't get this mentality of independence that then depends on what? On money bags.
Yeah.
Right. It depends on the money bags. And it puts you in a situation where the people think that they have the choice, but where in point of fact, they're only aware of this or that candidate who's coming to them through the media with the backing of folks who provided money. They wouldn't even know somebody that well if they hadn't done it. And as a result, the choice has been taken out of their hands. Am I making sense?
Oh, you're absolutely making sense. And we're just now learning the power of the state legislatures. There are so many grassroots people now who are running for these state seats, and they're learning that there is a Rhino Republican Party here in Ohio. I don't know if you heard about this, but what they were threatening to happen in the federal speakership race happened here in Ohio. Ohio was 67 in the House, 67 Republicans to 33 Democrats. And previously they had had a vote. They voted on an American First candidate for Speaker of the House in Ohio. He was going into the backpack bill, which is school choice, very pro-life, very pro-gun. And he was voted on, and it was a done deal. And the same day that the federal House went to vote for their speaker, the Ohio House pulled a backroom deal to where, get this, 22 Republicans voted with 33, all the Democrats, to vote in a moderate left-leaning Republican in a coup d'etat against the appointed and proved of and voted on Speaker of the House. And I have heard from people in the House that this is, you know, and I would say this is unheard of, but this isn't. They did this in 2019 as well. And we got another guy who is now actually under federal investigation for a $60 million bribery scheme. So the Ohio Republican Party is well known to be corrupt to the core.
Well, you see, and I think that that should suggest to people at the grassroots that we have been shunted aside. Mm-hmm. That they're actually trying to perfect a system that will have the outward appearance of consulting the people, but where real power will be allocated by a little clique, just as it is in and has been in states like Communist China and the Soviet Union and other states that are based on these totalitarian premises. Do you think, because y'all have worked a lot and you've been working a lot, and I actually find that I'm more and more encountering a spirit of resistance, if I may borrow your name, amongst people at the grassroots, but it's still kind of groping because they don't quite know how to organize themselves to handle it. I would suggest, and you can tell me what you think, that one of the things that may need to be done is we need to start focusing on the mistakes that were made at the beginning of the 20th century. And I have two real bugaboos. One is the income tax. I think that was a huge mistake, the 16th Amendment. And people say otherwise, but we wouldn't have to deal with these bloated government budgets if they didn't have their hands directly taking money out of our pockets to fund the national government. If that still had to be a decision that was going to reflect, however, something that in the working with the House and the Senate, you had to actually still consult both the grassroots people because of the nature of the House and the state legislatures at the state level. I think that would make a huge difference. So we need to start re-examining some of these things done at the beginning of the 20th century. We can talk more about that right after this.
Many watching Bridie on TV will remember the fiery speech from Dr. Alan Keyes at the annual State Republican Dinner that ended in repeated standing ovations. Dr. Keyes has been an articulate and passionate spokesman for faith, convictions, and consistently strong enough to resist the tug of political convenience. Alan pierces through the ethical haze of our time and calls us to stand up for the truth, knowing that you cannot have the right to do wrong. Get your download of Our Character, Our Future, an audiobook by Dr. Alan Keyes, exclusive to the Bridie on TV audience. Dr. Alan Keyes personally read and recorded our exclusive audiobook version of his timeless essays in Our Character, Our Future for this very special promotion. You can order it by going to www.imtv.us and click on Special Offer. It's available at only $19.95 for a very limited time. You'll not only enjoy a tremendous savings, but you'll get an amazing piece of literature read by Dr. Alan Keyes himself. Get yours today. Go to www.imtv.us and get this Bridie on TV exclusive offer.
Welcome back. I'm Alan Keyes. This is Let's Talk America. And I'm having, as I thought I would, a wonderful conversation with Michelle and Leah Svensson, the resistance chicks. I want to take a couple of minutes for you all to tell folks out there. I know we've done this before, but I figure it's good to refresh the memory because you are, how can I put it, a very interesting kaleidoscope of things, being yourself, folks who come from a background where you're kind of very self-sufficient. You can farm and teach others to farm, and things of this kind that suggest that old mentality of, in America, of self-reliance and the ability to really take care of yourself. But tell folks both a little bit about that background and how you have translated it into this commitment to try to revive the real sense of individual responsibility for the way in which, as a people, we use our sovereign power.
Well, you were talking before the break very clearly about kind of when the problem started, going back to the 21st, or the start of the 21st century and or the 20th century. And that's kind of where we go back to. We didn't actually grow up farming. We started doing it as adults, and it kind of evolved out of learning about our founding fathers. They were some of the most agrarian people. You know, you look back at John Adams, and I see that they saw the best way of living was through God's creation. And that teaches a self-sufficient, independent mindset. So when you say a kaleidoscope, that's the perfect depiction of what our founding fathers were. They had faith. We say faith, family, farming, and freedom on our show all of the time, because those things really make up the best of society, and they understood that. So it's an amazing transition. Lee is an ordained minister. We grow our own food. We've got a lot of opinions on the politics of the day. We are very in tune with our family. These are all the things that we portray to people that listen to us, because that really is, when we get back to that kind of foundation, then we are walking out the life that our founding fathers lived and the best that God created. Remember, God placed Adam in a garden. He didn't place him in a city. When Cain killed Abel, where did he go? He fled to the city. Most corruption happens there. And maybe Leah can remember the founding father that, who it was that spoke about, as long as there's land to be tilled.
Thomas Jefferson said, as long as there is land to be plowed, let no one be twirling the distaff. And it was kind of a play on women spinning yarn. Don't work in the cities. They say the mobs of cities do more to the corruption of the morals of mankind. And so you have these agrarian mindsets, but it's more than that. It's about what you were talking about self-sufficiency and the desire to not be beholden to other people, to your government, to work within your community. And so I think that what you're talking about is going back to the early 1900s and seeing the kind of the flip happen. And what you're really pointing to is the big bankers who were supposed to be regulated by Congress, and they met together and they formed another coup d'etat, and they put together for the election of 1906, they brought together William Howard Taft and Teddy Roosevelt to fight for one side of the ticket, because they wanted to get their patsy in Woodrow Wilson. And so in the dead of the night over Christmas break, they didn't just pass what you were talking about was the income tax, but they passed the Federal Reserve. So you had the fox guarding the hen house. So what they needed, Dr. Keyes, was the illusion, right? We have an illusion of collecting taxes, do we not? When you're passing $1 trillion bills, it's an illusion of collecting taxes.
You're making money out of thin air.
We're at modern monetary theory, which is we're making money out of thin air. And you've seen the bankers talk about this, where they just put zeros on. They don't print money anymore, okay? The Constitution was set up so that Congress could coin gold and silver coins. And when you do that, you're constrained to what we call a budget, okay? Mm-hmm. But if you and I just have a printing machine in our basement, Dr. Keyes, and we can go brrrr, you know.
Well, isn't that about to get much worse, though? Because I think with what they're planning with the digital currency, quote unquote, right? You are not only far distant from that requirement, which I think is still in the Constitution with respect to the states, because the states aren't supposed to actually accept anything as legal tender if it's not rooted in gold or silver.
Exactly.
Did they take that out? No, I don't think they did, actually. I think they've gotten around it in various ways as they have led people to kind of forget that we're actually supposed to have a disciplined currency. Yeah. And not disciplined by just the whim of some board over there working for the big banks and other things, but by realities about the nature of things. And therefore, you want to tie it to something in nature that isn't simply subject to human whim. I think we're going to be entering a wholesale period now where it's all subject to human whim. Mm. But though some people might think, well, that's okay because it's government up by and for the people and it'll be our whim. No, it won't. Right. I think it's clear now that we now have in our elites a preponderance of people who want to get rid of the people's role in our government. Am I being too alarmist? Because I think we're teetering on the edge of the utter collapse of whatever we have left of our sovereignty as a people.
Well, when you look at some of the wars that we've gotten involved in, and I know this is kind of conspiracy theory territory, but in Iraq, Saddam Hussein was moving towards a gold standard. You saw in Libya, actually, Gaddafi was moving towards a more of a gold standard. And you're actually seeing right now in China, China is buying up tons of gold. Russia is buying up tons of gold. Why is it? Because you have these other nations who are actually being, we're looking at Russia as an enemy, and we're looking at certain places as an enemy, and China's, you know, a friend and a frenemy. And there are other nations who have power and military who don't want to see America be the hegemony of the financial system. And so there is a war, and there's a tug of war happening. And the House of Cards that was built in 1944, where you had all these guys get together and they created this, you know, the dollar standard. The other nations don't have this. You know, African nations can't just print a bunch of money. When you see that happening, like in Zimbabwe, the country went under socialist principles. And so you're going to see, you're not Chicken Little. This is for real, guys. We are going to see the collapse of this because this printing of these dollars is a house of cards. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
And they postponed it in 2008. And there are those of us on the outside, maybe I sound very Ron Paulish, we are just ready for the collapse. And it's going to be bad. It's not like I'm excited about it, but we will never be able to rebuild and wake people up until the house of cards collapses and you see that it was never there to begin with. So I think that that's where we're. So you're not being an alarmist, although throughout the show, you keep coming back to this sense of hope. And yeah. I think that it's a very interesting thing for us to talk about because God is moving and doing miraculous things. And yes, it's happening in our government. It's happening in the grassroots. Meanwhile, we need to see also these things that are very serious, like a collapse of the dollar and an economic collapse and how dangerous that is. And look at them at the same time. And I think we can only do that through a biblical, historical worldview of seeing how God has acted throughout history.
Goes back to being self-sufficient. So you've seen the egg prices go through the roof. Get some chickens, guys, because the chicken prices are just kind of a little bitty taste of what can happen. So when we talk about being self-sufficient, it's not just because I'm a prepper. It's because I feel like it's the right way to live. I enjoy going outside. I enjoy planting things. I think it's God's natural way for us. But at the same time, there is a preparedness aspect to what we do.
Well, are we really going to be able, though, to break through what I think in the last half of the 20th century into the now 21st has been the encouragement of what essentially amounts to an abandonment of the spirit of capitalism?
Mm-hmm.
Because people talk about capitalism, it's all about money. No, I think capitalism in the first instance is all about initiative.
Yeah.
It's all about who starts it, who takes the initiative, and whether it's taking the initiative to go out and find a suitable place to farm or taking the initiative to turn an idea into something that's going to help people do their laundry.
Yeah.
You are talking about a mentality that says, I'm not going to wait for somebody else to come up with it and then hope that somebody will hire me and give me a little money so I can go buy some soap.
Exactly.
Right. I'm going to remember how to do it. And I'll even teach other people how to do it. And then we can build an enterprise based on how to do it. And others will benefit. But the initiative was always assumed to be in the hands of people who had that intrepid entrepreneurial spirit, that intrepid a spirit of wanting to wake up in the morning, knowing that you're relying on what you yourself have understood and been able to build. And in various ways, at various levels, and with various kinds of expressions, I think that was an important element in the ethos, in the conscience, in the motivation of Americans.
Oh, absolutely.
In the course of my lifetime, I think enormous amount of emphasis has been put on constructing an environment. And now I think the Democrats in particular are trying to augment what they were able to do to the population of the country in various nefarious ways by bringing people in who have no experience of the mentality that we're speaking of, but have lived under regimes that are basically oppressive, controlling, where some elite dictates the environment of all your endeavors. And they want to add that to their preponderance of electoral power in this place and that, so as to impose a final result which destroys the sovereignty of the American people, puts us in the place of folks who may have a little facade left of having a say, but where that say has in fact been boiled down to nothing. So at the end of the day, a leadership clique calling itself ideological or calling itself by some other name is going to substitute for the involvement and judgment of the people. But I think to revive that initiative is going to require a return to the character people had when it was the mainstay of the country's development. Yeah. And that character was decisively based on an understanding that it's not even you and nature, or you and some other folks, or you and your intelligence, or you and anything else you've got, that the first source of your intrepid courage was to ponder whether what you did was right and necessary according to God, and go there because you felt that God would stand by you as you did your best. Don't we have to look at that whole thing and realize that we must somehow refresh, fertilize that foundational sense of our spirit, of our soul, of the reason why we do what we do as individuals and as a people?
Okay, this is so good because you just put together like 500 different thoughts, and let me kind of weave them together because this is perfection. So what you were talking about is capitalism, where you have an idea and the idea is that you can do something. And America, people came to America to start their own thing. What you see on the left is the tax the rich mentality. So with the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, what you even have with the French Revolution is that you have a greedy mindset that sees the czars and sees the kings and queens, and they say, I want their wealth. Okay, so with whether it's an AOC or whether you see the people on the left, they're saying that these corporations are just not taxed enough, but the corporations are okay. Now, the corporations that you see, whether it's Crest toothpaste or Fruity Pebbles, they don't actually exist without the formation of the fiat federal dollar, because these large corporations don't exist without these gigantic million-dollar loans, okay? So when we're talking about the true spirit of what we would call good capitalism, God's capitalism, what you're also talking about is the last thing that you said is that, what has God called me to do? Okay. And you actually talk about this with the Declaration of Independence. Okay. So when you read the school books, the New England primer, they really are intensely focused upon morality. They have moral tales on the devil will try to get you to do this, how to love your neighbor, be kind. What does John Adams say? That our Constitution is made for a moral and religious people only. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. You know why? Because you put constraints on your actions, on how you're going to treat somebody. See, here's the thing. A lot of people think that businesses are set up just to scam other people. Everybody's part of the game. It's dog eat dog. No, because that's not the Christian way. The Christian way is we have freedom, we have liberty to love the Lord our God with all our heart and soul and strength, and love our neighbor as ourselves. And so we go to God and we say, God, what have you put me on this earth to do? How can I benefit my man? other mankind. I'm not going to lie to them. I'm not going to cheat them. And I'm not going to use unjust weights and balances. And so in that framework, that was the soil of the first America that God could bless, because we asked him first what we should do. Yeah. We didn't cheat people, and we used proper weights and balances when we were trading with one another. And that is true industry, and that is what we are striving for. But you're not going to get that way until we begin to have an overhaul of a revival, so that children and now adults are taught how to treat each other with respect and honor and dignity.
See, and I think that going through it in that way, so that you see, first of all, the real source of what is to be respected. In other words, we don't make it up on our own. What we should be respecting is something that reflects the combination of love and absolute knowledge and wisdom. Mm. That is God, right? So that things are put together in such a way that it is not only possible to serve and preserve you, but God has carefully thought through how everything working in the universe works together in order to sustain his commitment to your existence. If you then are willing to learn from him, because you need to negotiate that best on his understanding, not your own. Mm. But now we look at a situation. I think the whole business that's happening, for instance, with LGBTQ and all of this promotion, what are they promoting actually? We think that it's just about sexual pleasure and so forth, but what it's really about is acting as if you are the maker of your own self.
Wow.
That you live in a universe of that has been created, as it were, not as it is, but as it is according to your fancy, according to your imagination, according to your preferences and predilections. Aren't we in fact then planting a lie in place of the truth into the very soul of our people? So that they wake up thinking that they are the masters of the universe.
Yeah.
And that thought, because it banishes the true master of the universe from the picture and all that he can provide in the way of wisdom and understanding, and also a natural source of what the boundaries ought to be, what the paths ought to be that you are walking. See, as we try to make those up for ourselves, we stumble and fall because we don't have the knowledge required to do that. And even as our science advances, it advances in such a way that we need more knowledge to figure out how to use the things we've learned. But that knowledge isn't innate within us. It has to be gleaned from our knowledge of the Creator and our careful willingness to follow that lead. That's all being discarded. And in the process, I think they are setting us up for failure, don't you think? Because they want us to feel self-sufficient on a false basis, and they say that that can be sustained, but I don't think these people are really committed to that lie. They just want to gull Americans into putting themselves in a position where they destroy what is the foundation of the courage needed to sustain our initiative, our sense that we can do it.
No, you're absolutely right. And as you were speaking, and I feel like I'm listening to literally one of the greatest philosophical minds of our time, so it's always a joy to come on your show because I could just listen all day, is we're looking at, you know, generations that have gone through the public school system. So on the one hand, we are taught, you are a god, you are the master of your own creation, you're the maker of your own destiny. All of that is an illusion. It almost like, you know, a science fiction movie where on the outside you look totally free, but on the inside you are chained. You know, that's why we go back to the movie The Matrix, where they're in the Matrix and they have the illusion of being free, but outside they're in these eggs and completely slaves. Because we go back to Carnegie, Ford, and Rockefeller, and they did not want a nation of thinkers. They wanted a nation of workers. So they give you this illusion of you are the creator of your own destiny. And this is what the public school does so well, is they create people that are dependent on the system and slaves to the system, while being taught the lie that they are absolutely more free than anyone has ever been in the history of mankind.
It's a way of selling you the notion that bondage is freedom.
Yes.
Because you are absolutely bound, but you fancy yourself to be free because you are absolutely able to do things that go beyond the boundaries of your capacity to sustain the result, right? And that's true of the whole human race, because what they're encouraging with all of the sexual thises and thats is step number one. I think everybody must be waking up, particularly Christian-minded people, to the fact that what all this implies is the utter erasure of the family. No yes. family life. No family life, no sense, strong sense of relations or relationships, except those that are based on self-gratification. And family is not based on self-gratification. You learn that when you start to take it really seriously. Your gratification comes from what you do to acquit the responsibilities that are not in and of themselves always gratifying.
Right.
But the good results you can produce with them are gratifying.
Yeah.
And that is what sustains the family. And that ultimately is a reflection of what a real kind of love, which is not a love of oneself.
That's right.
But a love that transcends the self in order to work for others in a way that then has you utterly gratified.
Yeah.
If they are responding to that work in a way that preserves them and serves God, you actually find a kind of joy in it that transcends what is offered, and self-gratification is the only goal. Am I making sense? It strikes me that this is very nefarious, but that it also has power in a way, because only the devil would think of it.
That's really good.
And yeah. And I think that at the end of the day, we are not, you know, we struggle not against principalities and powers, right? But we are struggling against spiritual elements that are now not taken seriously, but that are more and more shaping what they are willing to allow us to conceive of as our freedom, right? The freedom to, in essence, renege on the promise of goodness that is built into us if we follow the will of God. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is a very simple concept called love. And love
real love.
Yes, but real love. So it goes back to the two commandments. Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. He said, the greatest amongst you will be the servant of all. Why did he say that? Because it is better to give than to receive. And what you're talking about in a family, when you have this giving and receiving, you know, Paul talks about this. Communicate with each other with giving and receiving.
Yes.
What you're talking about is loving one another. And a simple example, when you're cleaning the house and you're doing it for somebody and you're saying, wow, this is amazing, you did a great job. There was just something that you may not want to clean the bathrooms, but if somebody appreciates it, you could clean the toilet. You know, these are basic things that it, on a macro scale and a micro scale, that's what life is about.
Amen.
Amen. And I think that when you translate that then to something where every talent, every ability, everything you find in yourself that's capable of producing good, you put into that service of love to others, right? And yet, though they try to pretend that's what this whole ideology of theirs is about on the left, it turns out that their ideology encourages a preoccupation that cuts you off from that sense of giving and responsibility in order to isolate you in the midst of your delusion of self-gratification. Because at the end of the day, what you have failed to do for others is to build within yourself that spirit of God, which is the true empowerment of your existence. And that's why I think it ends badly. You are reaching for light, but instead you grope your way through darkness to oblivion, because you won't turn around and face the truth. Anyway, we've run out of time. And I feel like we just started with the good stuff. I hope you all will come back.
Absolutely.
I always hope that. I say that. And thank God you always do. And I appreciate that. So I look forward to seeing you again soon. You just keep on keeping on. Because what you guys are doing and part of and what you represent, it always makes me feel refreshed and glad once again to be part of this great struggle, because I think y'all prove with your radiant commitment to it that God loves it and he wants us to keep on keeping on. So that's what I pray for you. We'll be back right after this.